Welcome to Friend of Maryland. My name is Kat Pause, and this is a fat-friendly space. Today on Friend of Maryland, I talk about a great piece in the Sunday Mail from Queensland, Australia, that highlights fat activists Zoe Holmes and Kat Reed. I chat with Shannon Rucker about her new blog, Every Smile a Lie, Living While Fat. And I spotlight a blog from Dances with Fat about fuck flattering. There's a great new piece that was recently published in Australia. It was published in the Courier Mail in the Sunday Mail on August 19th of 2012. And the piece is about fat activists Zoe Holmes and Kath Reed embracing the F word. I thought I would share some of my favorite bits. The piece starts this way. Zoe Holmes is fat. Kath Reed is fat. Very fat, even. They are also intelligent, articulate, funny, and successful, each with friends and families they love and who love them. Later, the piece continues. Holmes got to know the heavily tattooed Reed, a self-described bolshy pump librarian who has a black tutu in her wardrobe and says pink is her natural hair color, as participants in a Griffith University study on attitudes towards fat people. Photos of them shopping, riding bicycles, doing yoga, putting on makeup, working, and generally going about their lives have circulated nationally in a new image library created for mass publication. Together with an exhibition by Queensland College of Art photographer Isaac Brown planned for October, stockybodies.com aims to replace the generic headless fatties images that negatively represent obese people. The article continues. Reed and Holmes are proud fat activists working to reclaim the word as a neutral descriptor, like tall, brunette, freckly, or brown-eyed, and garner respect for people regardless of size and shape. They eloquently argue appearance does not determine a person's worth, and good health is not necessarily determined by weight, and physical characteristics should not dictate how people live their lives. Fat activism and fat acceptance are not about promoting or justifying obesity, they scoff. Holmes confidently models her latest purchases at cutsleavage.com, and Reed's successful blog, The Fat Heffalump, has seen her quoted widely in online and mainstream media. She recently spoke alongside academics at Massey University's Fat Studies Reflective Intersections Conference in New Zealand. For me, the crux of fat activism is that every human being, fat, thin, or in between, should be treated with dignity and respect, Reed says. The way I do that is by living my life as rich and as full as I possibly can, full tilt all the time, having a great time and letting people see me, because you can't be what you can't see. There's so much fat hate in the world. I'm not trying to win those people. I don't give a damn about those people, she says. Who I care about are the people who, like me, believe they were nothing, still believe they are nothing. They're not. They're something. They're someone, and they matter, even if they just matter to themselves. It's one thing to type the word fat or read it on a page. It's quite another to use it in a conversation with someone, especially as a stranger, who is, well, fat. In fact, it's downright uncomfortable. So ingrained is the perception its use is rude as insulting. I stutter and stumble while talking to Holmes and Reed, using the word almost apologetically. The article continues in talking to a variety of other people involved in health research and fat activism research. At one point, she discusses Linda Bacon's new medical paradigm of health at every size, which argues well-being and healthy habits are more important than how many kilograms a person weighs, and also against weight loss for weight loss sakes. The author writes, "Bacon argues we might be fatter than ever, but we're also healthier and living longer. She urges people to accept their size, listen to their body's appetite cues, enjoy being active, nurture social, emotional, and social needs, and recognize people aren't made with a one-size-fits-all biscuit cutter. The article also talks a bit about fat stigma and the impact that this can have on individuals' lives. It closes out this way. It's so hard for society at large to believe fat people have lives, loves, careers, hobbies, passion, style, intelligence, humor, and value, that I'm going to live my whole life doing those things, having all those things, while being fat," Reed wrote in a recent blog post. "Not to prove to society that we do have those things, but to be someone that other fat people can see and hear, to be a visible fat person breaking the mold, no more furtiveness about living life. Holmes and Rhea agree it's taken a lot of personal healing to reach this point, but there's plenty of support available, and they want other fat people to follow their lead. I take a lot of strength from the online and personal communities just to get through it all each day, says Holmes. It would be impossible without having like-minded friends to scream at, to commiserate with, or celebrate with. I don't know what the magic bullet is or the magic answer, and I'm not saying I'm misconfident every day of the week because I'm not and nobody is. The best advice I've ever read is to be 110% yourself. The rest of it will come later. You can't be fake or faux or pull any punches about this kind of stuff, and that's where my confidence comes from. I'm brutally honest about what I am and where I come from. It's a great article, and I strongly recommend that you check it out. If you can't get a hard copy because you're not in Australia, you can find it online, and it's awesome. Today is Sharon Rucker, a writer and activist who blogs from Every Smile a Lie, Living While Fat, and also from On Her Throne. Shannon, thank you so much for coming on Friend of Marilyn.
Thank you, Kate.
Well, I stumbled across your new blog, Every Smile a Lie, Living While Fat, somewhere within the wonder that is Tumblr. And I loved it. And so that's why I wanted to get you on. So for my listeners who don't know what that is, Shannon, could you just kind of explain it to them what this new blog is?
This blog on Tumblr is a blog where I kind of step out of the idea that there's something wrong with being fat inherently and talk about my personal experiences and the intersectionality of living not only as fat, but as black, as female, and as all these other different things on this blog openly.
And what kind of inspired you to do that?
I stumbled across myself onto a few posts from other fat activists and people trying to make sense of healthism in America. And I decided that it was time for me to talk about it myself.
I like that phrase that you just used, make sense of healthism in America, because I think that's a really apt phrase. And I know that a lot of us in both like the fat acceptance movement and fat activism, but also within like fat study scholarship, you know, we kind of talk a lot about healthism and like what that means and health as a social construct and how it's used to oppress people. So what kind of role do you see Every Smile a Lie, Living While Fat? What kind of role do you see that playing in the fatosphere?
On Tumblr in particular, I've noticed a lot of blogs are dedicated to fashion and fat beauty, but it's normally the beauty of the variety of hourglass and pear-shaped figures and, you know, nice clothes and kind of very, after a while, it becomes a very surface-level and superficial thing. Well, how do we move past that? Because showing that fat people can be beautiful is definitely a step and definitely necessary, but Every Smile a Lot aims to kind of get past that and talk about the difficulties of really learning to embrace and love yourself in a world that is constantly telling you that you are ugly and unworthy and disgusting or funny or that you're abnormal in general. So I think that is definitely a necessary blog because it talks about the reality and not just the pretty parts.
Yeah, I think what really struck me, I can't even remember the first thing I stumbled across of yours. I know one of the things that I had seen other people reblog was your one about the fat people tropes, you know, so like the common ways we're presented with fat people, you know, whether it's the jolly fat person or the, you know, whatever. But I think the piece that really kind of that hit me and got me to start following you was something you had written that, yeah, it was about, you know, it's great to have places that are about promoting this idea that fat is also beautiful and, you know, fat-chin and, you know, fun things about being fat. But then there also has to be spaces where we talk about, like, how much it can suck. and the difficulties and show not just, yeah, show, I mean, you know, the underbelly or, you know, the darker kinds of sides. And there has to be spaces for that. And that's, I think, one of the things that I really admired about what you were doing was this idea of providing a space for that.
And that's exactly what it's all about, is that those voices need to be heard, because it's not just all about fashion or looking good and it's about kind of, I don't know, expelling or kind of being very open about how difficult it is. Because I've seen a lot of fat activists who will go around and say, oh, well, it's about confidence. I'm like, well, how do you get confidence in the world that's constantly tearing your confidence and your spirit down by telling you that you are not even worthy to live? You're going to die, right? I've had people come on my blog and say negative things about me.
Oh, yeah, the death threats, yeah.
I've had people come up and say, oh, well, and it's also a racist thing as well. I had somebody send me a message saying, oh, you know, dear Lanwell, you fat, ugly nigger, you're going to die.
Oh, nice.
I've had some pretty, like, nasty stuff come my way. It's like, you don't even deserve to live because you're fat, or you're going to die prematurely, right? So I think there needs to be a space to talk about that and be very open about it, as hard as it is. I've had other fat activists send me messages back when I send them accounts for their own blogs and tell me, oh, I'm sorry, I can't post this. It's too triggering for my readers. Like, the reality is sometimes even ignored by other fat activists.
Well, I guess there's,
I
guess sometimes there's that fear. And like, I know that, you know, I've been quite active. And I think you have too, you know, in different feminist kind of activisms as well. And, you know, I know that there's often kind of the fear, especially in early days of, you know, we have to stay positive and we have to only show the good stuff, because as soon as we start talking about the not so good stuff, then they have extra ammunition to use against us, kind of thing, which of course is ridiculous, because as you just mentioned, they don't need extra ammunition. They have all the ammunition they need. So we're not actually like helping them out in any kind of way by actually talking about our true own lived experiences.
Yeah, it's very much a situation of, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't type thing. So hiding it is not really helping. And that's another thing that inspired Every Smile a Lie, is that hiding the difficulties of my experience has not helped me. And there's a quote by a very famous black feminist that your silence will not save you. I believe it's Audre Lorde.
I was going to say, that's Audre Lorde, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes, it's Audre Lorde. Your silence will not save you. And this also applies, and it's double for me as a black fat woman. It's very difficult. So being silent about my experiences is not going to save me. So I try to be very open. I try to be very just as honest as I can about it. And sometimes it's going to be painful. Sometimes it's going to be, well, a lot of time for me it is painful.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to, you know, get to a point where I'm living and not just allowing people to tell me that I won't live, or that I can't live, or that I won't be accepted, or that I won't be loved or respected because of my body.
Do you find that your, you know, kind of the things that you have been writing about and the things that you think about, do you find that they often mirror the experiences that you see other fat activists share within the fatosphere?
Every now and again, yes. I do run across people who share similar experiences, but dealing mostly through Tumblr with the fat acceptance movement, I don't really see a lot of that. It's only recently that I've seen more of a little bit of a small explosion of blogs that are being a little bit more open. The first blogs I encountered were sort of meme blogs, where people were like, oh, well, you know, I'm going to make this little picture and put a cute little quote on it about fatness, right? So I would run into things like that at first, but now more and more I'm seeing blogs that are more dedicated to being open and honest. You know, at least every now and again, talking about the harsher experiences, which I appreciate.
So if there are other people out there that are interested in, you know, kind of sharing their own, you know, harsher experiences, as you put it, is there a way for them to, like, submit to the work that you're doing and you can share it through yours, or would they need to start their own blog and Tumblr?
Oh, no, I have my submissions open. There's an ask and there's a submission, so both are open.
And
I've only gotten, you know, really rude messages.
Oh, no.
I want to submit long, rude things in my submissions. Get it in the ask.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I get my fair share of hate mail as well.
Yeah.
But so it's good, though, to know that there is a place, because I'm sure that there's a lot of fat people out there who, while they enjoy seeing the positive fat affirming stuff, I'm sure at the same time, you know, there's a part of them that's like, but, you know, sometimes it really does suck being fat. And you know, I need a safe space where I can say that out loud without feeling like I'm letting down the entire movement kind of thing. So it's really good to know that they can turn to your blog, Every Small Little Lie.
And I hope that more people realize that it's okay. Everything doesn't have to be all, you know, super positive all the time, because that's not life. That's not reality.
Yeah. Yeah, no, Samantha Murray, who's one of my favorite Fat City scholars, she actually has a piece that she wrote about lived ambiguities. And she talks a great deal in that piece about, the ambiguity she feels, and often the guilt and the shame that she feels as, you know, being a fat activist who's, you know, always talking about certain things, but yet at the same time has days where she's not that happy with her body. You know, and she really struggles with that. You know, does being body positive mean I have to love my body all the time? Or, you know, is it okay that I still have days when I struggle? So I think it's a really, important topic. And I think that it's one that isn't, as you've already said, talked about enough. And there aren't enough spaces that allow us to do that freely without feeling like we're letting everyone else down. So I'm very glad that you're doing that.
And for me, it's just it's very liberating, honestly. I mean, I think a little bit by nature, I'm a writer. I express myself through words. So when I blog, it really helps me to kind of, it's like extracting poison in a way, to kind of write about it. It's not always completely gone. Mm. And I hope that it can kind of do the same for others if they want to submit or they read something that they identify with. And it's not like I get all hate mail. I get positive messages every now and again from people who are like, I had that same experience. Thank you so much. And it makes me feel like I'm just not alone in the whole wide metasphere, like just talking to this wall when I get those messages from people who understand and have experienced themselves. And from people, sometimes I don't get messages, but, you know, I may get a like or a reblog or a note on a reblog or something. Somebody saying that I've experienced this too, and I appreciate this post, and that means the world to me.
Well, Shannon, thank you so much for coming on Friend of Maryland today and talking about the work that you're doing.
Oh, thank you, Kat. Good invitation, like I said.
Well, I hope you'll come back again sometime in the future, and I will continue to look forward to seeing stuff from Every Small Lie, Living While Fat, come up in my Tumblr dashboard.
All right, thank you.
Spotlight today is a piece from Dances with Fat. Dances with Fat is the blog of Reagan Chastain. This piece was published on August 23, 2012, as an entitled Fuck Flattering. Quote, I saw a t-shirt that said Fuck Flattering, and it got me thinking. We all know that if beauty was a mountain, the summit would be nearly unattainable. Our stereotype of beauty is incredibly narrow and often involves digital assistance. And so the idea of flattering generally means dressing so that we look closer to that stereotype. Fat women are told early and often that beautiful is not attainable for us, but we are still encouraged to always try for flattering, to look thinner than we are, more of an hourglass, bigger boobs, smaller waist, dark colors that hide our roles, shot with fat girl angles, with the camera positioned high and our necks positioned strategically to hide our double chins. Ye old fat girl clothing store sells pants with something called tighter tummy technology, that promises to smash our stomachs into something different and inexplicably better shape. Photographers guarantee that they will make us look 10 years younger and 10 pounds lighter. I've heard a fashion commentator criticize a fat actress who wore a beautiful light-colored dress, saying that she doesn't like to see big girls in anything but black or navy because it's just not flattering. I've heard a fat actress admonish fat women to wear shapewear to put our curves where they should be. As a dancer, I've been encouraged to prioritize a stomach that appears to be roll-free over breathing. I've heard fat women say that they don't want to see a bare fat, insert any body part here, as if the solution to that wasn't just for them to look away. When I was photographed for a magazine and said that I didn't want the pictures to be retouched, the editor said, "But don't you want to look your best?" When I said that my best does not include digital retouching, she said, completely perplexed, "I don't understand." They'll never allow us to reach the summit, you see, but they want us to keep climbing anyway. Look, you get to dress how you want for whatever reason you choose. You can pick clothes because you like them, because you think they will gain you social approval, because they highlight your shape, because they disguise your shape, because your significant other likes them, because your mom hates them, because you think they are flattering, because you think they are unflattering, or for any other reason. It's your boss, and they're your clothes, and you are the boss of your underpants and also the boss of your regular pants. We do have the option to stand at the base of the mountain of beauty, throw off our jacket, and give flattering the finger with our arm fat waving unrestricted in our tank tops, our breasts comfortable in a bra that neither lifts nor separates, our skirt showing every roll of our stomachs, and our leggings showing every dimple or cellulite on our thighs. That is a completely and totally valid option, and those who do not like it are welcome to practice the ancient art of looking at something else or, you know, getting the hell over themselves. We get to choose how we dress our bodies and why, and we do not owe the world flattering. End quote. Closing the show is Gossip with For Keeps.